State Skyline Studio.
WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything that's in the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Happy Sunday morning, everyone. As you may have guessed, this is not Rick Pearson. I'm Amanda Vinicky of WTTW-TV's Chicago Tonight, filling in for this week for the one and only Rick Pearson on the Sunday Spin. It's your weekly look into the politics and the policies that shape our world. So as Rick would say, get that coffee brewing and get ready to dive in. Before we get to the political conversation, let's first deal with the personal and why it is that Rick isn't here. Man rarely skips a beat, let alone a Saturday, Sunday on the radio. So why am I in the host chair? Don't worry. Rick is and will be just fine, but he did have to have shoulder replacement surgery. Earlier this week, he told Twitter followers that he'd be off the grid, but who is he kidding there? Of course, he has been following the news, tweeting out the latest headlines. It is a sure sign that he'll be back soon enough to his muckraking awesome self. I know he does appreciate all of the kind messages that have been sent his way, so do me a favor, guys. Dedicated Sunday Spinners, take to the Sunday Spin Facebook page, the Twitter account, or what have you, and send him get well wishes. That's facebook.com/thesundayspin. And then on Twitter, just erase the, and that handle is simply Sunday Spin. Of course, you can give us a ring too, now or anytime through 9 o'clock. The number is 312-981-7200. Once again, 312-981-7200. Schwann, you laughed at that, huh? Muckraking self. That's right.
Rick is a dedicated person, and, you know, shoulder surgery isn't going to keep him down. He's going to stay on top of everything.
I imagine him not using his right hand to type out the latest on Twitter and just pecking away.
I can offer left-handed lessons, being a lefty.
You're a lefty, huh?
Yeah, so I can help with that.
My mom is as well, and I am not. And it was one of those things where she had a hard time, like when I was a kid, I would remember being confused. And then my brother's a lefty too. And I was like, why do you write like that? And then sitting when we would go out to dinner, bumping elbows, that's always tricky. You lefties,
I was
20.
Always seated at the right or at the outside
planned,
of the
huh?
table
uh-huh.
because of the left hand. I would hit, you're right. You'd bump elbows
yep.
with whoever was sitting next to you if you were on the inside.
As if you needed any more reason for my brother and I to, you know, tease each other and fight. Like we needed one more thing.
Only one aspect of sibling rivalry
yeah,
there, right?
Yeah, he's awesome. You know, all right, so you guys, I wanted to talk. I went down to Springfield earlier this week for inauguration of J.B. Pritzker, and he brought in Maroon 5, soon to be doing the halftime show of the Super Bowl. And curious, who would you guys pick? That was who Pritzker picked to headline his inauguration ball.
Well, there was talk of Paul McCartney.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. The rumors ran rampant. Yeah.
I want the boss. I want Bruce Springsteen.
You'd want Springsteen.
Yep. I want Springsteen there.
I'll take that, too.
All right. There we go. I don't know. I'm undecided. I need something Illinois. We'll be back after this.
First business that matters.
It's the equal and fair ability of people to pursue a financially independent, secure, and healthy life. It's called financial justice, and on MLK Day, we'll have an in-depth conversation about why it's needed now more than ever. Join us at 5:08.
Steve Rizanich and the opening bell tomorrow morning on 720 WGN.
Watch for Chicago's very own stories with Micah and Joe. Micah Mateer and Joe Donlin. Weeknights on WGN TV News at 9.
If tragedy strikes you or your family, where would you go for legal counsel? Who would you call at any hour of the day or night and know that you would hear a caring voice on the other end of the phone? Someone who truly cares about you and your loved ones. Someone who will fight for your justice. Who would you call? You would call Illinois' premier personal injury and workers' compensation law firm that has fought for injured workers and people who have suffered serious injuries and the loss of life due to the negligence of others for over 40 years. you'd call the GWC Law Firm. When you do, we'll be there for you and your family, and we'll treat you with the same respect and professionalism that we've treated thousands of families who have suffered catastrophic losses over the years and retained my firm. If you're seriously injured in an accident, hurt in the job, a victim of medical negligence or nursing home abuse, just call GWC and we'll fight to get you the money that you deserve. I'm Attorney Lou Cairo, owner and managing partner of GWC, and you have my word on it. Call us at 312-999-9999 or visit us at justicestartstoday.com.
When was the last time you were in a food fight? Now, I'm talking about a good old-fashioned take-you-back-to-summer-camp food fight. The Smith sisters, Walter E. Smith Furniture, just did one and used a pristine white sofa as the shield between them to prove you don't have to worry about everyday messes when you have worry-free furniture. It's all on video. You thought you had fun at work? Take a look at smith.com. There's spaghetti with marinara. There's baguettes being used as bats to swat away soaring meatballs, red wine, and all of it on a white sofa. But then watch how easily they clean it up. It's like it never happened. Check it out online. Stain-resistant fabric. You can put on nearly any frame, and with sofas starting for around $700, well, it's time to get your grown-up on. Get your grown-up furniture at Walter E. Smith's Worry-Free Sale, where you can save up to 25% on worry-free furniture and just about everything else. 10 Chicago-area Walter E. Smith showrooms, or head to smith.com, S-M-I-T-H-E.com, and duck. Or just pay attention to the website to learn more.
Looking for ways to save with your Medicare plan? Walgreens is a preferred network pharmacy with many plans nationwide, which could mean lower copays for you. So bring your prescriptions to a Walgreens pharmacy today to start saving. Walgreens, trusted since 1901. Walgreens participates as a preferred network pharmacy with UnitedHealthcare, Cigna HealthSpring, and Express Scripts Medicare. For a complete list of available plans, please contact 1-800-MEDICARE. TTY users should call 1-877-486-2048. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or consult www.medicare.gov. Other pharmacies are available in our network.
It's time to join the millions of people using Zoom video conferencing. Turn any size conference room, huddle room, or executive office into a Zoom room with flawless HD video, crystal clear audio, and instant wireless sharing. It'll even work with your existing hardware. Start your meetings with a single touch or use Zoom's new voice command feature. Hey Zoom, start meeting. Huddle happy. Visit Zoom.us to set up your free Zoom room trial today. That's Zoom.us. Zoom video conferencing.
It's a new day in Illinois, with Democrats now in control of all of the levers of power in state government and at the federal level. The nation's longest ever government shutdown continues, today marking the 30th day of that partial shutdown. I'm Amanda Vinicky. We'll cover all of that and the rest of the week's biggest political news for your weekly spin. That federal shutdown began before Christmas, December 22nd. At the heart of that impasse, a wall on America's southern border. President Donald Trump campaigned on it as a candidate, and now that he's in the White House, he says he's going to deliver on that promise. Democrats, now with a majority in the U.S. House, say they too want border security, but they're putting up a political, metaphorical wall to the notion of funding a literal, physical one. There's no clear resolution in sight of this partisan standoff, despite President Trump just yesterday coming out with a proposal he says could break the logjam. He began the public offer with an ode to legal immigration after having presided over a well-publicized naturalization ceremony earlier Saturday.
I told them that the beauty and majesty of citizenship is that it draws no distinctions of race or class or faith or gender or background. All Americans, whether first generation or 10th generation, are bound together in love and loyalty, friendship and affection. We are all equal. We are one team and one people, proudly saluting one great American flag. We believe in a safe and lawful system of immigration, one that upholds our laws, our traditions, and our most cherished values.
Trump went on to lay out terms that managed to peeve folks on both sides of that debate. Temporary amnesty for so-called dreamers brought to the U.S. as children, but no path to citizenship. In exchange, the $5.7 billion he's been demanding to build a physical barrier, a wall, if you will.
If we build a powerful and fully designed see-through steel barrier on our southern border, the crime rate and drug problem in our country would be quickly and greatly reduced. Some say it could be cut in half.
Leading Democrats were quick to reject the deal. We'll get the take later from local members of Congress. In the meantime, some 800,000 federal employees are waiting on their paychecks. Some of them, of course, struggling to pay rent, pay the mortgage. It's causing a ripple effect on the economy, and the work that those employees do isn't being done, causing damage to national parks, delays for farmers, immigrants seeking work visas, and so on. With special events staff not on the job during the partial shutdown, the White House was scrambling when the national champion Clemson Tigers football team came to visit. What's a fast food loving president to do? Bring in the Happy Meals and Domino's, of course. So Trump not taking side, he was very excited about his all-American meals there of hamburgers, of pizzas. All good American food, he said. But not everyone was, well, loving it. The co-owner of Chicago's fanciest, most renowned restaurant, Alinea, offered via Twitter to give the Tigers a finer dining experience. But as of the last word, the team had not yet taken him up on that offer. Meanwhile, add one to the ever-expanding field of Democrats who want to take on Trump in 2020. The latest entrant? New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, who announced her run on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. She says that she is running because she is a mom and she believes in universal health care for all children. And there we go. Even as we see that Democratic field expanding ever more entrants are expected. Legal questions continue to surround the current occupant of the Oval Office, particularly with an explosive report published by BuzzFeed alleging that Trump had directed lawyer Michael Cohen to lie to Congress. BuzzFeed is standing by its reporting, but in a rare move, special counsel Robert Mueller's office issuing a statement describing the report as inaccurate. Trump's team had immediately denounced the story.
Tonight, the president's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, labeling BuzzFeed's stunning report as categorically false and repeating their claims that Michael Cohen is a convicted criminal and a liar. The White House is also denying the report.
Look, that's absolutely ridiculous. I think that the president's outside counsel addressed this best and said in a statement earlier today that it's categorically false.
The president this weekend calling the story a disgrace to the country and to journalism. This reporter, as I noted, spent the early part of the week in Springfield to cover the inauguration of Illinois' new governor, Democrat J.B. Pritzker.
I, J.B. Pritzker,
do solemnly swear
that I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
Constitution of the State of Illinois.
And the Constitution of the State of Illinois.
And that I will faithfully exercise.
And that I will faithfully exercise.
The duties of Office of Governor of Illinois.
The duties of Officer of Governor of Illinois.
According to the best of my ability.
According to the best of my ability.
Pritzker's election means that Democrats now control both chambers of the Illinois legislature, as well as the state Supreme Court, and every constitutional office. Pritzker has already been actively signing executive orders and bills into law. Illinois, of course, dealt with its own partisan stalemate, though it never actually shut down the government. In his inaugural speech, though, Pritzker vowed to pass a budget on time, also to legalize marijuana, to raise the minimum wage, to take on climate change, and an otherwise progressive agenda. Pritzker, who spent $171 million to win the governor's office, spared little expense to celebrate his win. He will not say what it cost, but as I noted, he brought in Maroon 5. That was the top secret mystery band to play his inauguration party. Back north in Chicago, the action was in the courtroom where Thursday, three Chicago police on trial for conspiring to cover up former officer Jason Van Dyke's shooting of Laquan McDonald were acquitted. A day later, Van Dyke, who in October was found guilty of second-degree murder, was handed his sentence by Judge Vincent Gaughan.
The impact that this sentence, this crime has had on Laquan McDonald and his family,
You're seeing the impact on the Van Dykes and their family, the children. That's the shame.
16 shots, 6 years, 9 months in prison. Van Dyke's wife, Tiffany, had pleaded for her husband's leniency. Her leniency for her husband.
My biggest fear is that somebody will kill my husband for something he did as a police officer, something he was trained to do. There was no malice. No hatred on that night. It was simply a man doing his job.
Activists and members of McDonald's family, you'll hear soon from his great uncle, Pastor Marvin Hunter, expressed disappointment and outrage.
A whole lot of people in this country and in this county and in this city, very angry, very angry. I've been told time and time again that the citizenry of the county of Cook is not going to be satisfied with a sentence that's anything south of 20 years. However, I want to say to everyone, everyone in the city of Chicago and across this country, that if they have sentenced him to 1 minute, it is a victory. It is a victory because what has happened in this courtroom today has never happened in the history of this county. And it sets a precedent, and it sends a strong message to unjust police officers that now you can and will go to jail if you're caught lying, if you're caught breaking the law.
It is sure to continue to be an issue as the race for Chicago's next mayor heats up. Early voting starts in just about a week, January 28th. Now we're going to end the Sunday Spin's spin on a somber note, paying respects to Illinois State Trooper Christopher Lambert, killed at the end of his shift when responding to a car crash in the last snowstorm to hit the Chicago area. The governor spoke Friday at his funeral.
Think of heroic acts in terms of grand gestures, big moments of drama and obvious danger. We too often overlook the heroism of the quiet moments of kindness. In the willingness of one man to stop his car on a dark and snowy night because someone might need his help. This simple act of selflessness is just one small measure of who our Illinois State Police Troopers are. And Christopher Lambert embodied the best of those values.
He was known as Lam Lam by his fellow officers, and who describe him as an energetic, fun-loving, good cop, and a great guy. He was 34 years old and leaves behind a wife and a young daughter. This is WGN, Chicago's very own 720 and WGNradio.com. And good morning again, Amanda Vinicky filling in for Rick Pearson on the Sunday Spin. Coming up just ahead, Congressman Dan Lipinski to talk transit and the shutdown. We also will talk to one of Governor Pritzker's new deputy governors. And then Congresswoman Robin Kelly will kick off the 8 o'clock hour, followed by a bright political mastermind, Scott Kennedy of Illinois Election Data. That's ahead on the Sunday Spin.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Psych, it is Amanda Vinicky filling in for Mr. Pearson this cold, snowy Sunday morning. And I am joined now by Congressman Dan Lipinski, Democrat from Western Springs, representing the 3rd District. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning, Amanda, and I'm honored to be your first guest on the Morning Spin.
Well, thank you so much. So, you know, earlier I had mentioned that it is the now 30th day of the partial shutdown of the federal government, setting, of course, already having set a record. I want to know, have you negotiated at all with President Trump, or what is the status like in terms of trying to make any headway out in D.C. on this?
Well, it's just ridiculous that we're in this shutdown right now. I mean, for a president to just say, "Okay, I'm not going to sign any spending bill unless you give me exactly what I want. This should not be happening. But, you know, then the era of Donald Trump, there's been a lot of things that no one ever expected. Members of Congress are sort of just a little bewildered, you know, asking each other, you know, trying to figure out, you know, when does this ever end? It's two sides are dug in, and the sides are, you know, led by, you know, President Trump on one side, Nancy Pelosi on the other. And we've been passing bills in the House to reopen the government right now, which is what we should do. But I'm not sure how this ends, and I keep looking for signs of hope. And I'll give a little bit different spin on what happened yesterday and say there's possibility of some hope from that.
Because Speaker Pelosi seemed to reject it really even before the full details were out on that, is what I had read. I obviously am not privy to what she knew and when, but yeah, what is your take? Is this a path forward?
First of all, this is not going to be a final deal, but if this actually, as a lot of people are not talking about the fact that the president said, Mitch McConnell said he will bring this to the Senate floor for a vote. Now, they've got to write this up actually in legislation very, very quickly, but there have been groups, both on the House and the Senate side, bipartisan groups have been trying to come up with a compromise. I'm in the Problem Solvers Caucus in the House. We've been working on something. I think in the Senate, if there were, you know, a group of senators that who've been working on this already, if they actually got together and say, "Hey, a bill's coming to the floor of the Senate, we will try to get together, offer a bipartisan compromise, and on the Senate floor, it's open to any amendments." So if they actually got down to legislating, if the president actually got out of the picture, I think that's obviously a big problem that we've been having. He's so dug in. Maybe there is a solution that the Senate can find, but I'm not expecting that, but hey, you know, I gotta look for some sign of hope.
What have your interactions, or have you had any, with President Trump? You noted that he is very stuck on this idea. Of course, he did campaign on it and was elected on the promise of a wall. Have you had any conversations with him about that, or really in general? There are obviously a lot of members of Congress, 435 of you. So have you had interactions with him personally?
I've only met President Trump once, and that was at a social event at the White House. That was my only experience. I've not been invited to.
You're not negotiating
bipartisan meetings. I certainly haven't. Have not negotiated. No.
Were you going to add something there? Yeah, go ahead.
Here's something that a lot of people talk about, how it's impossible to negotiate with the president because he changes his mind from one day to the next, which is true. But here, I think this is even more emblematic of the problems of working with President Trump. Back in September of 2017, we're coming up to a possible government shutdown. The debt ceiling needed to be raised, and Democrats, Republicans were at odds over how long we were going to pass a bill to keep the government funded and raise the debt ceiling. So Republicans were saying at least 6 months. Democrats were saying we want it for 3 months. There's going to be a meeting at the White House with the Chuck and Nancy, and then Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan. I was told the story that the president's staff sat down with him, along with McConnell and Ryan's staff, uh-huh, and said, "Okay, we're going to have this meeting, and Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell are going to say we need at least a 6 month extension here, and you're going to listen to them telling the president this is what you do. You listen to them, then Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi are going to say no, we need 3 months. That's, you know, as long as we should go. And so you're going to, you know, listen intently to all of them, and then you're just going to say, you know, I'm with I'm with Paul and Mitch. You know, we need at least at least 6 months, and that's how this meeting is going to go. They got into the meeting. Everyone went through their spiel.
Their script, uh-huh.
And they get to President Trump, and he says, I'm with Chuck and Nancy. And apparently Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell almost fell out of their seats.
Jaws dropped.
It was all planned. It was all set up. And so even if the president is with you and you think he's with you, you don't even know that. So that makes it pretty much impossible to negotiate with this president.
Well, difficult to predict, in fact, when this shutdown may end. I want to take a moment to look stateside with you some, in that I believe you have been one of the co-chairs of now governor, but at the time when you were appointed governor-elect, Pritzker's transition committees, and that is the one focusing on infrastructure. Can you tell me about your work there and what you think needs to happen infrastructure-wise in Illinois?
Well, it's been a long time since we've had a capital bill in the state of Illinois, so you know, I was honored to be a co-chair of that committee and chairing the transportation portion of it. I'm very hopeful here. We need more work. Obviously, Chicago area, we have horrible congestion on our roads. Public transit also certainly needs an influx of funding for infrastructure. I'm optimistic that it's going to get done. We will have very soon. We'll have the report coming out of our committee. I'm very hopeful for that, and still hold out some hope that we can do a infrastructure bill on the federal level, although I think the longer the shutdown goes on, the less hopeful I am about that.
Another of the consequences that doesn't necessarily seem obvious off the bat, but then, of course, as you noted, that will become all the more clear down the road. Literal down the road. Before I let you go, wanted to get in. You had previously sponsored legislation that would implement a carbon tax. Is that something that you're planning to do again? Can you just real briefly explain why you believe that could be a solution to combating climate change?
Well, 10 years ago, right now there's all this talk about the Green New Deal that progressive Democrats have come out with. 10 years ago, I got together with two Republicans in the House, and we introduced a carbon fee bill that was fully that all the money went back to people. So I'm actually a co-sponsor of a bill. We will be introducing it next week that it puts on a carbon fee. All that money then would go back and out to every American in the form of a check with the money that is raised in that. I'm working on my own bill that is more similar to the bill I did 10 years ago, which would cut the payroll tax as a way to get all the money back. But I think the way to approach climate change, we need to do something about it. I think a carbon fee is the right way to go. It is more of a free market way of getting it done. We have to pay for the, carbon is a cost, an externality. We should actually make everyone pay for that and the damage that it's doing. It'll lower the amount of greenhouse gases that we are emitting, fight climate change. But all that money should not just, I think the best way to get people to go along is to say, look, you're going to get money back. It is not money that's going to go into the black hole of government. So I'm hopeful that we can finally get moving on solutions to the climate change.
You heard it here first, folks. A carbon tax plan to be introduced next week. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Congressman Dan Lipinski.
Thank you, Amanda.
And we'll be back with more on the Sunday Spin. Good morning, Amanda Vinicky of WTTW-TV's Chicago Tonight, filling in this morning for Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson on WGN Radio 720, The Sunday Spin. And I am joined by, with his brand spanking new title, Deputy Governor Christian Mitchell. Good morning.
Amanda, good morning, and good morning to your listeners. Happy to be here.
Now, a week ago or so, I would have been introducing you as State Representative Christian Mitchell. But let's just get that out in front. Why go from being an elected official to somebody who, you know, serves at the discretion of the governor?
Well, it's a difficult choice. I really love being a legislator, Amanda, but I will say that, you know, part of the reason why I got even involved at the Democratic Party level this cycle is because I believe in J.B. Pritzker, I believe in Juliana Stratton, and I believe that with them as governor and lieutenant governor, we've got a chance to really execute upon some of the things that I've always cared about when I was a state representative, making sure that we get more money to education funding, making sure that we are sort of restoring the confidence of the people of Illinois that that government is going to be on the side of working families, raising the minimum wage for teachers, figuring out how we can make Illinois a really, really great place to do business, to go to school. I felt like I could do more by helping Governor Pritzker implement his vision, and so that's why I decided to say yes. I think we've got a really great opportunity here to do it in a bipartisan fashion. We've already taken some actions that I think demonstrate where the governor wants to go, so I'm excited to do it, excited to help.
Now, this deputy governor isn't a constitutionally mandated title or office or anything. So explain to our listeners, what exactly does a deputy governor do? You're one of several. What is your job and what's in your portfolio?
So it's a high-level staff position that advises the governor. So we've got four deputy governors, all of them incredibly high-quality people. Dan Hines is doing work on budget and the economy. Sol Flores is over health and human services. Jesse Ruiz is covering education agencies. And then I'm doing transportation and some other strategic planning stuff, including public safety. So each of us will have sort of a suite of advisory responsibilities to the governor, but we'll also be overseeing a group of agencies. And one of the things that Governor Pritzker's talked about pretty consistently is that we need to break down silos in government, have agency heads working together, make sure that we're working in teams, sure, sharing best practices across each agency to deliver the best possible services for the taxpayers of Illinois at the lowest possible price. And so part of our job is to drive that innovation, drive that change, but then also make sure that we're driving an agenda that helps people in Illinois understand that this is now a government that's going to function well and in a bipartisan fashion and be on the side of working families.
Observers, I think, could reasonably say it had better be a government that functions given that Democrats are in charge of it. There's really no excuse to say, hey, the other party wouldn't allow it as X to pass because it's all in Democrats' hands. You were part of the House, though, when there was a supermajority, and there wasn't action on a lot of seemingly priorities, or at least what Democratic leaders talked about, be it passing a permanent tax that would help be a resolution to some of Illinois' fiscal challenges, raising the minimum wage. Why now? How did Democrats keep it together? And do you have any hope that Democrats will be more successful in passing their agenda through this time around than they were previously?
Yeah, so let me give you two answers to this. So on the one hand, I think leadership matters. And I think the Governor Pritzker has demonstrated just in his first week the ways in which he is going to lead. So his first action getting in office was to sign executive orders, making sure that we're putting Illinois back on the side of working families, pay equity for women, referring more wage theft cases through the Department of Labor to the Attorney General's office. Signed an executive order the other day, making sure that we are doing all we can to take care of our veterans. So he's putting his money where his mouth is, number one. Number two, I think that JB campaigned on a very bold agenda, and it was about, sort of equalizing our tax system so that the wealthy are not paying half as much as a share of their income compared to the middle class. It was about raising the minimum wage. And so when you have that sort of leadership coming from the governor's office, that can really drive action in the General Assembly. So that's part one. I think his leadership matters. The second thing I would say is that JB has been emphasizing bipartisanship on the campaign trail and since he's gotten into office. We had a fantastic inauguration event, and at that event were a ton of Republican legislators. He went to Republican events during inauguration week in Springfield. So, yes, Democrats in theory could pass everything on their own based on votes, but I think that that's not the way JB Pritzker views government. He thinks it's a place where people ought to come together regardless of party or race or geography and ought to be part of the solution. We want good Republican ideas. We believe that Republicans ought to be be part of the solution and that they have ideas that are worthy of merit. And so we want to do this in a bipartisan way, not just sort of try to ram things through.
You know, I got to say, Governor Bruce Rauner talked about bipartisanship as well. When he was first inaugurated, there were certainly Democrats who were quite enthused and hopeful about his administration. He says that a lot of the policies that he wanted to push through were supported by Democrats. That didn't mean it happened.
Yeah. So look, much respect to the outgoing governor for his service. Everyone deserves those sort of commendations for making the sacrifice. But I would just say that Governor Rauner didn't always have the best handle on the legislature because he didn't spend the time and invest in the relationships. And JB has been different already in that he's talked constantly to the Republican legislative leaders. He has already talked to and met with individual Republican legislators and will be doing that throughout his time. And JB really does listen to people, incorporate their feedback, and try to move forward. He doesn't believe that he's got all the best ideas. He believes that he's the leader and he's going to drive the team to do good work, but that the best ideas can also come from people across the aisle. I think that's a contrast in leadership to Bruce Rauner.
Thank you very much. That is Deputy Governor Christian Mitchell, newly with the Pritzker administration. This is WGN Radio 720. I'm Amanda Vinicky with the Sunday Spin.
Now the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Rocking out to the Sunday Spin theme music. Actually, it's Amanda Vinicky here, typically with WTTW-TV's Chicago Tonight, and filling in for Rick Pearson this morning as he recovers from shoulder surgery. So, as I noted at the top of the program here, or perhaps you hadn't had your coffee yet or gotten out of bed, but encouraging everyone to call in, of course, with any questions, comments, concerns for me or the guests, but especially this morning to give well wishes to Mr. Pearson. You can do so by tweeting at us. The handle is at Sunday Spin. On Facebook, you just go to Facebook and it's The Sunday Spin, or give it a call to 312-981-7200. That's 312-981-7200. I am joined now by another of members of Illinois' congressional delegation, and that is U.S. Representative Robin Kelly. Good morning, Representative.
Good morning, and let me give my best wishes to Rick and a speedy recovery.
I'm sure if he's not listening live, he'll be listening via podcast, I'm sure. So on his behalf, I'll say thank you.
So may I ask
you the question, of course, the news is this deal, the supposed ability to break the logjam as proposed by the president yesterday. What are your thoughts on it? Is it acceptable? Is this a path forward?
It's a logjam that he started and said he would take responsibility for. I think that before we get into any negotiations, we need to open government. We need to stop holding people that don't have anything to do with it hostage. And I think the problem with the president is that he doesn't tell the truth. And I think he needs to show a good faith effort by opening government, and then we can negotiate. Not he gets his way ahead of time, you know, because he's not trustworthy, because there was a deal and he's the one that went back on the deal.
You know, the president, I know he talked about, I think, early in December, saying that if there's a shutdown, he owns it completely and he's, quote, proud to shut down the government. And yet this latest effort shows just that, right? That he's making some sort of effort. So now is it on Democrats to come forward with some sort of recognition that he's given some, now it's time to give? Is there any amount of money that you would vote for in terms of as he's described it, a physical barrier, a wall of some sort, or is a wall, period, a non-starter?
Well, I'm against the wall, and mainly because experts say that they don't think a wall would do any good. And even Republicans from Texas, they don't want the wall either. So it's not, you know, people say the Democrats, but it's also, you know, our colleagues on the other side of the aisle that don't want the wall either. And experts say that, you know, it really won't stop things. I am perfectly fine with giving more money for Border Patrol, for technology, for scanning equipment and things like that, that I think will really, really help, but not for a wall. And there was money offered. It just wasn't the amount that he wanted.
The $5.7 billion.
I guess I'm saying, like, how do we know if we agree to this that he will really live up to his part? Because he hasn't. He hasn't. He doesn't tell the truth.
How do you get over that on this or, frankly, any other sort of negotiations in government? There isn't an election until 2020, and heck, he could win again. Is government basically at a standstill for at least another couple of years, given that lack of trust?
That's hard to hear that he can win again. Well, I think that, and as last week, more Republicans voted with Democrats, and even in the Senate, Republicans are working with Democrats. So, and I think that Mitch McConnell and those Republicans have to speak up, you know, more to him, not just speak in private about, you know, what they're unhappy about. No, I mean, I think things, you know, it's not just about him. You know, we have to progress on other things, you know, health care, gun violence prevention. And, I think we'll move on other things. And, you know, he's not just going to stop the show, and we're not going to let him. But I just feel like if we give in on this and he's just not trustworthy. That's the only way I can say it. And every time he doesn't get his way, is he going to shut down the government?
How long do you anticipate this current shutdown lasting? When will there be a breakthrough? I hesitate to ask people to make predictions, and yet really right. 30 days in, again, I covered Illinois' budget impasse, and I don't think anybody at the onset would have ever imagined it would have gone on for years. Mm-hmm. So might there be a breakthrough?
I mean, I'm hoping in the next week or two, we were called back. So hopefully, in the next week or two, I don't want to see this go on. The Illinois delegation met with people from American Federation of Government Employees and hearing their stories, people from HUD, the Treasury, TSA, IRS, you know, and it's their stories plus, you know, the ripple effect with the people they serve, the ripple effect with the economy. I was at a small business, and they said at first they didn't feel it. This was in D.C., but now they're feeling it that, you know, people aren't getting paid. So, I hope that we can end this within next week as soon as possible.
And I will get back with you after the break on effects locally of this partial federal government shutdown. Amanda Vinicky on the Sunday Spin, speaking with Congresswoman Robin Kelly. We'll be back right after this. Good Sunday morning, and thank you for listening to WGN Radio 720, The Sunday Spin. Your host for this week, filling in as Rick Pearson recovers, is yours truly, Amanda Vinicky, with WTTW-TV Chicago Tonight. And I'm joined right now by Congresswoman Robin Kelly of the 2nd District. Just before that break, Congresswoman, we were talking about the federal shutdown. And I know that you and other members of the delegation met on Friday, I believe it was, with those who say that they've been affected. You got to some of that, but I just wanted to give you an opportunity to perhaps explain to those that say, all right, Washington, D.C. is far away. Things seem to be functioning just fine for me. In what ways does the federal shutdown impact people who are residents of the state and maybe, depending on government services that are affected, not even realize it?
Right. There's about 7,400 federal workers in Illinois that are furloughed or working without pay. And we met with people from the Treasury, IRS, HUD, EPA, TSA, Federal Aviation, and You know, they talked about, of course, like landlords are asking for their rent, you know, banks are asking for their mortgage, but also they talked about, like in HUD, the people that are going to be affected, that may have to leave the homes that they live in, you know, seniors and people with disability because money is not coming in. Of course, we know about TSA already. They're being asked to work without pay, and people are calling in or people are working, you know, more shifts than normal. So it's that concern for the actual workers and their families. But and then it's the people that they serve. And then again, it's the economy, because if people don't have money, they're not going to shop. So this reverberates all over.
Now,
and then EPA was talking about, you know, they can't check the things they're supposed to be checking, you know, water, land, air. So, of course, you know, that hurts neighborhoods, cities, the country.
I'll give a shout out here to an article, I believe, in this Sunday's Chicago Tribune regarding problems in the Great Lakes and the issues that zebra mussels and such are causing in terms of fish developing there. So as you talked about the EPA, give that a read, everybody. And now, Congresswoman Kelly, I heard when you brought up the notion that we could have Trump in the White House for 8 years. He certainly has his loyal followers who would be thrilled at that notion, but I know Democrats are certainly hoping to take back D.C. as that
Definitely.
Field is growing. Are anybody that you are backing? It's obviously quite early, but is there anybody that
No.
you're getting behind?
No, not at this point. You know, the field is growing, as you say. I still feel it's too early for me to say who I'm with. I want to see what the field will be.
You have been around politics for quite some time, having served as a chief of staff to a state treasurer. You were a Illinois representative to the state house prior to going to Congress. Can you speak to what changes you have seen as a woman throughout the years serving in each of those capacities in government? Is this a time for Democrats to have a woman as a nominee? Is that something you'll be looking toward?
If the person is qualified, it shouldn't matter, you know, what gender they are, what race they are, what religion they are. Definitely in Congress, we now have 113 women serving, which is fantastic. And as most people know, we have our first two Muslim women, our first two Native American women. We have women representing districts that haven't had women. So, you know, I think that's a great thing. But, you know, we're, what, about 51% of the population, and we're still just inching toward being one-third of the House. We're closer probably to one-fourth of the House. So we do need good women to serve.
There is a newly elected member to the Illinois House who already is looking to go to Washington, planning a run for the U.S. Senate, because she says the culture in Springfield in Illinois is so bad for women. And she's heard, believes that it is better in the nation's capital than it is the state's. Is that an accurate description? As somebody who, I frankly don't get out to D.C. all that often, when I do, it is to, you know, admire the cherry blossoms and to be a tourist versus really a worker. Is that accurate? Or could you describe the culture of women, particularly in this moment of, quote, Me Too?
Well, I mean, we have a female that's the Speaker of the House, and just culturally across the United States, things can be better in this Me Too moment. I think the Me Too moment has made men more aware of, you know, what they do and how they behave. Not that I'm putting that on all men, but I wouldn't know if I haven't been in Springfield for so many years. I don't know, you know, the culture in Springfield, the culture period has to change and has to improve. I think there is improvement because of the Me Too movement, but of course it can get better.
As noted, Illinois does have a new governor now, J.B. Pritzker.
Mm-hmm.
What have your conversations with him been about something that you advocate for, and that is a construction of the South Suburban or Peotone, whatever you want to call it, airport?
Well, we talked to him about that even when he was running. It just didn't start now. And we're talking to his staff and letting him know. And he knows from me and from other elected, the mayors out here, and even state reps, state senators from the Chicago area to Kankakee, Joliet, that this is something, Democrat and Republican, that we want to see happen. So we'll see. We're going to be, he knows we're going to be.
But no guarantees on his end about whether he will make it happen or not, or whether he'll do all he can to make it happen. Obviously not.
I mean, I feel more positive about that he will make it happen, and he'll see, you know, that it doesn't take away from O'Hare or it doesn't take away from Midway. For this airport to be built.
And then just a quick final question here. I know that you are an advocate for more gun rights, something to be done to rein in the violence that we see in mm-hmm. the Chicago area, but also obviously across the nation. Any hopes for action on that front? Or as we talked about with one of your colleagues earlier, Congressman Lipinski, says there's a lot that's really taking a backseat as the conversation is so much on immigration and on the shutdown.
No. We are ready with H.R. 8. That's the background check bill. And that's a bipartisan bill. It's been bipartisan. It's just that the Speaker Ryan or Speaker Boehner would call the bill to the floor. It will be called to the floor now, and we have, it's a bipartisan, and we will send it to the Senate and hope that it will pass in the Senate and go to the President. And I feel like that's just the beginning, because background checks, of course, are super important. Everybody agrees on it. 90% of Americans want it. Over 70% of NRA members agree with it, but you know there's other things that are needed too. But this is what we said.
Chicago, you know, we're going to have the number of voters in Hispanic majority precincts is going to be, you know, somewhere in the 20% range. So it's a significant amount of the vote, and it's going to take a really low number to qualify for the runoff. You know, a few years ago in 2011, we had an aldermanic race on the west side in the 24th ward. There were 18 candidates. The candidates that advanced to the runoff had 18% and 13%. You only needed 13% to qualify for the runoff. This time around, the mayor's race, we're going to have anywhere between 13 and 15 candidates. So it's entirely plausible that a number in the mid-teens will qualify you for the runoff.
We'll be back to speak more about all of the money that is flying in and out of candidates' wallets and campaign committees with Illinois Election Data's Scott Kennedy. I'm Amanda Vinicky. More Sunday Spin coming up in just a bit. Good morning. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN Radio 720. I'm Amanda Vinicky, filling in for Rick Pearson, joined in studio by Scott Kennedy of Illinois Election Data, who was, during that break there, making fun of my Hallmark addiction. But let me just say, I also watch, of course, WGN Morning News, listen to public radio, and, of course, WTTW Channel 11, which has some fine programming. So my taste isn't all terrible. Just want to get that out there for the world to know. Scott, in addition to breaking you off before you could make fun of me on air for that, I also think I cut you off as you were kind of going through the list in terms of where the candidates for mayor stack up. And so Bill Daley, way out in front. Just can you briefly go through the rest of the field? Yes, financially, not in terms of the polls. We're not going to go there.
Yeah, looking at the field, it sort of tapers off, but there's this really large middle section. You know, Tony Preckwinkle's got just shy of about $3 million. Gary Chico just shy of about $2 million. Susana Mendoza about $1.5 million. And this is based on the money that they had as of 12:30 or 12:31, plus the money that we're aware of that's come in. You know, the thing to keep in mind is that they're aggressively spending that already. So it'll be interesting to see who can afford to stay up. You know, I think we're seeing some candidates that are more on cable than on broadcast, which the cable is obviously cheaper. But I think that we've got a number of candidates here. There's nobody that has so much money they that can drown out the field, and we've got a number of candidates here that are capable of communicating reasonably effectively or near what each other's doing. And the polling is showing us that there are a number of candidates all sort of mixed together with that only have to make a little bit of improvement to qualify for the runoff. There's almost no chance that we're going to have an election that doesn't have a runoff. You know, if one candidate got over 50%, then there wouldn't be a runoff. But with this many candidates, we're virtually guaranteed for that.
Yeah, no way, no how. Let me tell anybody who is listening, Sunday Spinners, that now is your opportunity. If you have a question about campaign numbers, voting numbers, any of that, now is your time to ask them. Give us a call, 312-981-7200. You can also text that number, again, 312-981-7200, or write in. Our Facebook page is The Sunday Spin. Twitter handle, Sunday Spin, because Scott Kennedy of Illinois Election Data can answer them. One of the pieces of information gleaned from all the data was really the high turnout in the last election, particularly in the Chicago area. I'm wondering if that says anything about what you predict, if anything, for turnout in the mayor's race in these coming municipal elections. Or like, will that trend continue? Or are people going to be fatigued? I mean, we just got done with one election. You tell me you've got to do another one, and there's 13, 15 candidates. How am I to choose?
Yeah. You know, you look back in November, and typically in a midterm election, the statewide turnout is anywhere from 49 to 51%. It doesn't move all that much, and that's going back 20 or 30 years. And then all of a sudden this year, it was at 57%, so it was much larger. And then, you look at what are we going to see in the mayor's race. I think with so many candidates, there are enough people, there are enough interesting options that everybody's going to have some candidate that they at least want to go vote for. So as long as the weather isn't hurting that, it seems like we should be heading towards a pretty large turnout. And then you see some of these forums, these candidate forums. You know, there were pictures in the 47th Ward on the northwest side, and it's this full school of gymnasium. There was a candidate forum in the 49th Ward on the far north side the other night, and they had 700 people there just to hear these aldermanic candidates in the dead of winter. So it seems like that voters are paying attention. I think the polling shows that there are a lot of undecided voters still, but it's not that they're not paying attention. They just haven't made up their minds yet.
Yeah, anecdotally, I moderated a forum for the ACLU of Illinois between some of the mayoral candidates on Friday night. And again, we didn't actually get snow, but it was predicted. And yet there was a full auditorium there and, you know, side rooms with people watching a live stream. There certainly is a lot of enthusiasm for this race. Let's turn our attention to one of those aldermanic races, which, of course, all can be so very important and crucial for neighborhoods. And that is, of course, the situation where there's a bit of a David v. Goliath. The David's name is Ed Burke, and Goliath, Goliath's name is Ed Burke. The Davids, there are several of them in terms of folks running in the 14th Ward. Tell us about the lopsided fundraising or money. I guess it's not even fundraising as much as he came in with a lot of money in the bank, Alderman Ed Burke.
Yeah, you know, he's been in a very powerful position as the chairman of the Finance Committee. It's allowed him to have a ton of donors and raise a ton of money, and he hasn't had to spend money in many years, so he's been able to sit on money. So he's got about $10 million just in his candidate committee, and then he's got another, he's got a PAC with about $2 million, and then his ward organization has another $500,000. So we're looking at a guy with about $12 million here, just a little bit more than that, running against three candidates, none of whom even have $20,000 in their account. So for, you know, sometimes we say money is everything and money's going to decide the race. And here, on the one hand, you've got a longtime incumbent, power of incumbency, and a ton of money. And on the other side, you've got these changing demographics. This is a ward that's now 70, 80% Latino, and he's facing criminal charges. So we're going to find out what these campaign fundamentals tell us about a race like that.
We do have a caller on the line. I'm not sure. Perhaps a question for you, Scott. Let's see. Who do we have here? Dan, good morning.
Oh, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. I appreciate it. I had a quick question about the number of signatures required for someone to get on the ballot. There's everyone understands that we need new direction. New people to get involved. And for example, with the Cook County Board President running for mayor, if she steps down, that'll open up that position. So I'm wondering, the signatures required seems to be really a problem for a lot of potential candidates. Is there a way that we could require less signatures? I think it's like 5,000 signatures or 10,000, and then if you want to run as an independent, it's like 25,000. Those are just huge numbers.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In order to run for mayor in the city of Chicago, you need 12,500 valid signatures, and you're allowed to turn in an unlimited amount, so candidates are typically turning in way more because, there are some errors and so forth. But it's really problematic, and we've seen a number of mayoral candidates get kicked off the ballot, and two more are facing potentially getting kicked off this upcoming week. You know, in terms of changes, it used to be that the powers that be favored this system because it really favored people that had the ward organizations or the party backing. And that's no longer really the case. Those don't really exist. So we're seeing even the party back candidates having to spend a ton of money to go and do this, and they hire a bunch of temporary staff to go get the signatures they need. It wouldn't surprise me if we see in the next few years switching to a system like we see in some other states where you have a ballot access fee. If you're going to go and pay to get these signatures anyway, they might as well move to a fee structure where you could have the option. You could either pay a fee to get on the ballot, or you could go do it the old-fashioned way, the shoe leather and the signatures. But it seems like we're potentially moving in that direction. So we'll have to keep an eye on Springfield.
Well, and I'll add that there is also a signature argument to be made, or that is often made on the state level, whereas there, the powers that be may still actually appreciate the system as it is now, where there are different signature requirements because there aren't quite this many candidates and they are able to sort of hold on to current power structures, or so the thinking goes. Others would say that this is a way to make sure that you don't have these kind of crowded races that are so confusing to voters, and to really cover the ground there. And also adding that should the Cook County board president seat open up if Preckwinkle succeeds in her plan to running for winning the mayor's office, I do believe that it would be at least in the interim selected from within the county board. So
That's right.
Wouldn't see another election signature gathering process come right away. Unfortunately, we do have to leave it at that, though. I know Scott Kennedy of Illinois Election Data is filled with a whole lot more data to share, and I know I have plenty more questions for him, but I appreciate the opportunity to have been with y'all this week. I'm again Amanda Vinicky with WTTW-TV's Chicago tonight, filling in for Rick Pearson, who has texted me. Be assured, he is listening even in his recovery. So thanks for everybody wishing him to get well. This is WGN Radio. It's 8:57.